This is the Matter of Perspective, a geopolitical podcast of Danube Institute. Today, it's the 2nd of June 2021, we'll talk about the Visegrad Group. This year, we are celebrating the 30th anniversary of the group. However, it is important to know that the history of the group goes back centuries before, and we are talking about Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Hungary. And they have an important history of cooperation in the last not just three decades, but hundreds of years. Today, the countries of the Visegrad Group altogether have the third biggest population in the European Union after Germany and France. And altogether, they have the fifth largest economy in Europe, or 12th largest in the world. My name is Anton Benaszewski. I'm the Geopolitical Research Group Leader at Danube Institute. And I would like to introduce our guest today, Peter Dobriewiecki, who is a research leader at Antal József Knowledge Center, and Tomasz Orban, who is research fellow at Danube Institute. Let's jump into the topic. My first question. The Visegrad Group was created in 1991 based on a common vision. The regional cooperation of the Central European countries will help these countries to overcome the legacy of the Soviet past and help to join the Euro-Atlantic structure, such as the NATO or European Union. And actually, they succeeded in this main core idea. How did this idea evolve in the last three decades, Peter?
Hello, thank you. It's nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation to the Danube Institute and to Anton personally. Anton basically summed up the question, so we could end the question already here, because yes, it's a success story. We might say that this is the biggest success story of the Visegrad Group, that they managed to join NATO, not in the same year, because as we know, Slovakia joined later, but in two phases, and the European Union together in the same year, and relatively quickly. So when we look back at the early 90s, at the idea of Euro-Atlantic integration, the idea was supported by European, not EU member states, but the from the European family, acknowledged the fact that Central and Eastern Europe should belong to the family, but they visioned accession period of 10, 20, 30 years. The fact that it happened so quickly is, I think, partly contributed to the Visegrad Group's joint efforts of pushing this agenda and gaining support for this agenda. When we speak about the idea of belonging to Europe, I think Tadeusz Mazowiecki is the first freely elected Polish prime minister's famous words before the European Council in, I think, 93, but I might be mistaken. It's back to Europe. It's a famous speech by him when he said that we are happy to be here. We're summing up his words, of course, in a little bit more current format, I would say that the main gist was that we are here, please accept us, and don't forget that what you take for granted, these words were addressed to Western European states, that please don't take for granted that what you have is something that was taken away from us, and we are not in this position because we wanted to be in this position, but because history happened as it happened. So the idea of belonging to Europe, I think, is a strong idea still current in Central Europe, and I think, jumping a little bit ahead in the topic, all the negative collocations that might come from the old new member states discourse, that's, I think, is still current in Europe, comes from this. The fact that we Central Europeans don't think that we should be regarded as newcomers just because of the fact that 50 years of communism chained down the region, so to speak. We are part of the same cultural historical group as the rest of Europe, and as such, we I think should be treated as equals in not just as a political level, but also as a historical cultural level. And I think this is where we currently stand.
And Tomasz, you were analyzing the summits of the Visegrad Group in the last three decades. How the main topics and the main goals have changed during these years on these summits?
Well, yes. first of all, thanks for being here as well. I've looked through several hundreds of summits and meetings held in the last 3 decades. And as you, both of you, have already summed up, as the, in the first decade, the main directives were the Euro-Atlantic integration. And almost every meeting and every summit were centered around the idea of going through those integration processes as one, even if it didn't happen in case of Slovakia. After that, when the V4 countries have joined both to NATO and the EU, there was a sense of fulfillment. Like their primary objectives have been reached and they needed a new, something new to start gravitating towards some new scopes and means to de-scope cooperation. So after 2004, I call this period the period of stabilization and the rise of regional diplomacy. There was a certain underlying theme that these countries learned that negotiating with supernatural structures or individual countries is far easier if they do it together as a bloc. And after 2004, they continued to do so in a steadily increasing manner when negotiating with different economic, political, strategic issues. They try to do it as a bloc whenever their interests aligned. After that, the third decade, as I've discovered going through the major themes, was, I think, it's the decade of cohesion, the decade of building regional cohesion across East Central Europe. It's the main directives for the cooperation, to broaden the cooperation in both scopes and volume, and to reach out and design common policies and approaches with the neighboring countries and regions. Further, the most important are obviously the Eastern Partnership countries.
Yeah,
and
we'll talk about that a bit later, about these kind of partnerships. Peter, you mentioned that the Visegrad Group's 3 decades is actually a success story. They entered the European Union, they entered the NATO, they formed a successful common policy in Central Europe together. So now they can just sit back and relax. Or what holds together now the group of these countries?
Sure, yeah. This is the problematic, basically, of the Visegrad cooperation from a wider perspective. So people who are looking at the cooperation not from inside, but from outside, might think that mission accomplished, exactly as you said, and what now? So the critics usually come up with this thought that it's good that they are together, but if we look at economic or political goals, often they do not align. So why they are together? And this is a tricky question, because we have also many goals that do align, but they are not so visible. And the fact that the Visegrad cooperation still exists, it has its cultural, educational, industrial and political leg, so to speak. So it's a multi-legged cooperation format, and this is the strength of it. So the fact that ministries, politicians, or just administrative officials do talk with each other on daily level, they have joint policy positions, they meet on low and mid level, not just the visible high level political meetings, is a success story. And also, let's not forget that Central Europe as the Western Balkans are, it's hard to define this, a highly volatile region when it comes to ethnic divisions. And the fact that the Visegrad cooperation managed to smooth the relations between especially Poland and Slovakia, but also a little bit between Poland and the Czech Republic, is a great success story that's omitted quite often. Because if you look back at the 90s and the early 2000s, Hungary's relationship with its neighbors, Romania, Serbia, Slovakia, was not ideal, so to speak. And the fact that although there were different politically motivated governments with different programs, but still the cooperation was maintained, still it was an ongoing thing that celebrates today, this year's 30th anniversary, shows that besides NATO and EU accession, the big success story here is the fact that it still exists. And the fact that it wasn't held together by a whims, but by stable cooperation that's gradually evolving. I wouldn't say that it's evolving in one direction in the past years, because it's evolving to different directions, but it has some main pillars, as I mentioned before, on different areas that are ongoing and that are the reason why this cooperation will continue. And I would say this is the biggest success story of it, that while the countries in the group are members of bigger different groups, still their regional cooperation is a deeply integrated one.
So can we talk about Visegrad V4 brand as it is, or is it known outside of Europe or even Central Europe?
Well, outside of Central Europe, definitely, yes. Outside of Europe, I... more and more, I would say. After 2011, 2012, we see a dramatic increase in meetings in various V4 plus formats. There is no such thing as one V4 plus, but there are several of them. V4 plus, Eastern Partnership, Western Balkans, Benelux, Nordic, Scandinavian countries, but also V4 plus Japan format exists, V4 plus Taiwan, especially in regards of the IVF, the International Visegrad Fund, it has become, yes, sort of a global brand, which is more and more recognized every day.
Yeah, I guess for the big players, it's easier to discuss economic or foreign policy issues with a big group of countries, not just small countries one by one, right?
Yes.
If I may add something, that yeah, it's true, but it's also a matter of fact that, for example, China's case shows us that if the country is too big, as China is, then the V4 group is too small still. So the 16, well, former 17 plus 1, now 16 plus 1 format again showcases that China, the V4 of course reached out to China to have a V4 plus format with China as well, but the reaction were such that we could see that China is more interested in a bigger regional grouping. But yeah, as it was mentioned before, exactly, there are countries, for example, like Israel, Turkey, Japan, South Korea, for whom the V4 plus format is really beneficial. Because if the joint European Union approach towards Israel, for example, is always a tricky question due to various political and domestic political reasons, the V4 grouping could, I think, under the former Hungarian presidency 4 years ago, could reach a really beneficial agreement with Israel about security cooperation that I don't think would be possible either on a bilateral or on a European Union level.
Well, in Europe and also outside of Europe, we know other well-known corporations, groups, brands like the Nordic, the Baltic states, Benelux. How the V4 group is distinguished between these groups, or can we distinguish? Is there some specific character of the V4? Can you call something like that in case of the Visegrad group?
I think there is a specific, so to speak, ideological character to it. It's it's a political core set of beliefs that were also formally agreed upon in the 1998 summit of Budapest, when the V4 countries, except Slovakia, which was exempt of that summit, signed a joint resolution which underlined their commitment to traditional European democratic values, a sort of Christian democratic outlook, which was very similar of the founding principles of the European People's Party back then. Now, less so.
Sure. Yeah, it's hard to talk about it, comprehend these different regional cooperation formats, because we have the Benelux states. That's a I think end of sixties, early seventies format, which is by now really casual cooperation. That for somehow we in Hungary always tend to think that, oh, the Benelux states, this is something that's really an important cooperation. But it's I would say more a name than a working format. On the other hand, there are the rise and shine sort of formats, like the Slavkov cooperation, that was heralded as a big new success story, and then we see that as the political parties are not in power anymore in those states as they were back in the day, now the cooperation is not, it's existing, but it's like not that important anymore. Or for Polish people, a really painful experience, the Weimar cooperation, the Weimar Triangle, which was the big dream of the of a democratic Poland to be become one of the big players in Europe, to be on the same level with Germany and France. And then, of course, politics made their way forward, and I don't think that it's, we can count it as an existing cooperation format anymore. So yes, the Visegrad cooperation is, I would value it highly, because its activeness, its 3-decade-long existence, and its future perspective all indicate that this could be a really good cooperation format that should be looked upon on the right level. So there will be new cooperation formats that will have some specific edge to them, as the Bucharest 9, for example, security format, or the Three Seas Initiative in the region, which is infrastructure, energy-wise, connectivity, north-south connectivity project. But the Visegrad cooperation's multi-levelness, again, I would highlight this, means that it's a special kind of cooperation due to the fact that it's quite deep and ongoing in many levels.
Mm. And if you are talking about the V4 brand, well, obviously to build a brand, you have you have to have specific economical conditions, economic cooperation, foreign policy. Probably we will talk about that later as well. But inevitably, you have to talk about soft power tools as well. How can we talk about such, in case of the V4 countries? How can the V4 countries strengthen this part of their cooperation? Can we talk about cultural power? I don't know. Milan Kundera, Béla Bartók, Ferenc Liszt, or the historical past, the Christianity and their deep roots in tradition. How can we distinguish culturally the group, and what could be their main soft power benefits, their cultural benefits? How can they sell themselves on the European market?
I would say that the bridging nature of Central Europe is a highly important value. The fact that for centuries all these countries formed a bridge between East and West, and the fact that they do still do it now, as the Eastern Partnership is strongly supported by the V4, as is the Western Balkan, European and Euro-Atlantic integration. So this bridging nature is still existent, it's still visible, and I think it should be highlighted more, although I think our governments are doing their best to highlight the ongoing support for these countries. also we have to be careful because the V4 brand was strongly supported, I think, by different countries in different periods of time. But politicians tend to be over-optimistic sometimes, while people on our part of the world, think tanks, academic life, tend to be too negative. So we have to balance these two approaches. But when somebody says that the V4 brand is a non-existent thing, and the other day we hear from politicians and this is the upcoming new thing in the world, and everybody is looking at it as a new occasion, then we have to draw the balance and the fact that there are certain situations where the V4 brand is really good. But we also have to accept the fact that the V4 brand, in some cases, for example, in the United States, is not so visible as we would like in Hungary it to be. So there are topics when we have to push for a V4 brand, cultural topics, for example, or research and innovation, or sustainability, as we can see that, for example, the sustainability issue is now coming up in the V4 with the V4 Joint Sustainability Goals, I think that's the name of the initiative. So in these areas, there is place to promote a brand. But we should not look at the V4 brand as an all-present solution for everything, because it cannot work as such a thing.
Yes, I think to talk about a V4 brand, culture sells, yes, Central European culture definitely, but I think education is the most important aspect that is getting more and more interesting for people outside of V4 countries. And this can be seen especially in the IVF annual reports, because the IVF in the last 20 years has given up more than 100 million euros for certain, especially cultural programs. But
the Visegrad Fund, just to be clear here. Fund, yeah.
Yes. One-fifth of that money went out to non-V4 countries. And from those countries, primarily the applicants opted for scholarships and university mobility programs. So I think education is one way to attract people and so to speak to promote this bridge aspect of Central Europe that you have just said.
Yeah, well, it's important to know that the Visegrad Group has such fund which promotes and supports cultural initiatives, not just among the member states, but as you mentioned, outside of the group, mainly in the neighboring countries.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we talked a lot about things which hold together the group. Now, we have to talk as well about the contradictions which are found within the group as well. So these four countries are not always found on the same opinion. They have their lines of divide. And we can know that we see a clear line of... mostly clear line of divide between the countries of Poland and Hungary and Czech Republic and Slovakia. The first two, Poland and Hungary, they tend to promote their own vision in some specific questions, while Czech Republic and Slovakia, they usually follow the mainstream line of European Union. So how would you describe this these lines of divide, and are they really so important in the future of the Visegrad Group?
So I remember Foreign Minister Szijjártó said just a couple years ago that one thing should be clear about the Visegrad 4 is that the interests of these countries are not aligned on just as many issues they are. So, yes, of course, there are divides, there are divisions, there are conflicts. And I think, and this coming from a historical viewpoint, most of these are not strategic, but ideological. And coming from a point of, you know, how others see us and how do we want to present ourselves. And there was one instance that almost broke the Visegrad 4 back in the 90s when Czechoslovakia became the Czech Republic and Slovakia in December 93. After that, the Slovakian Prime Minister was, well, harbored very anti-Western sentiments and was very skeptical of Euro-Atlantic organizations. And at that point, most of the leaders of the other V4 countries, and especially Václav Klaus of the Czech Republic, they believed that further cooperation is just senseless, and instead they pursued individual approaches. And that division, that was purely an ideological one. Well, not purely, but that was the core of it. And its result was that Slovakia did not join NATO with the rest of the group in 99, but in 2004.
Yeah, well, we can mention also some current issues which show some line of divide between the countries, like the national policy of Hungary and Poland versus the critics coming from European Union, or the quite, let's say, anti-Russian foreign policy of Poland. Poland is a neighboring country of Russia through Kaliningrad, and because of its borderline with Belarus as well, so they perceive a Russian threat in a much higher level than Hungary or Slovakia, for example. These are just the most recent contradictions between the countries.
Yeah, exactly. Also, the question of China, I think, is besides Russia, China, the role of China in Central Europe, the role of China as a economic partner, business partner, is also a dividing question. Again, as it was mentioned just minutes ago, ideology is an important question, and also the strategic perception of a given country. And Russia, China, plus the question of European integration, I think these are the three topics, the deeper European integration or the future of Europe, so to speak, are those divisive issues that will cause many headaches for our politicians in the region in the future as well. But the fact that the V4, again, we wanted to talk about negative things, but I will say something positive. The fact that, nevertheless, the cooperation is ongoing, besides these facts, shows that it's an important thing. Because if you speak with Polish politicians or even people on the street, the question of Russia is an always present issue. It's a universally present security threat for not just politicians, but citizens alike. So the fact that Poland accepts the fact that Hungary maintains good ties with Russia is something special, I think. So Poland wouldn't accept this fact from other countries, I think, in Europe or somewhere else. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, and as you mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, that the existence of the Visegrad Group still after 30 years, it's by itself a success story.
Exactly. Also, we have to mention the 2015 migration crisis as a uniting point, because until then, yes, as it was said, Poland and Hungary maintained a more confrontational course within the European Union. And as such, it was often mentioned that the V4 is politically divided because Slovakia and the Czech Republic want to belong more to Europe. They accept all the major players' decisions, while Poland and Hungary always criticize the decisions. Well, this changed in 2015 with the fact that Slovakia and the Czech Republic also rejected the relocation scheme of the European Union. And even Slovakia joined Hungary in two bids before the European Court. Again, they challenged this decision unsuccessfully, but still it shows that Slovakia, which has the euro and which is the, in some sense the deeply integrated country of, in economic sense for sure, of the V4 in the European Union, still pursue this agenda, shows that this is a changing moment for the V4. We will see what China will bring. The question of 4G and 5G development in the region, I think it will be an interesting question, because we see that the new US government, as the former one, also shares this agenda point, and they will put strong pressure on Central European states to reject Chinese companies and accept more, accept the Western ones, the US ones, while we see that Hungary in this regard has already made up its mind. So let's see how Poland will react to something like this. And for me, these are interesting questions in the upcoming years.
Mm-hmm. Well, and against these dividing lines, probably the most uniting policy of these countries is foreign policy, and probably the policy of European neighborhood and the questions of extension of European Union. Let's talk about that in the next minutes. Well, Poland has its own initiative started in 2009, the Eastern Partnership, which aims at mostly at the countries of Polish neighborhood, like Belarus, Ukraine. Well, Moldova is a bit far away from Poland, but still, and Azerbaijan, Armenia, Georgia, or the countries of the Eastern Partnership, and Hungary, in some way, does the same with its policy towards the Western Balkans. How could you describe this foreign policy, this common foreign policy efforts of the Visegrad group towards their non-EU members?
Well, it is, first of all, it's a strategic question. It has economic ties and security ties towards it. To it, and it's clear that for the Visegrad group, it's important that their neighboring countries could join the Euro-Atlantic institutions in the future. For that,
well, it will give them more influence within the European Union as well, right? Because the weight of the EU decision making will shift a bit from the west towards the east, or more to the center of Europe.
Towards east, yes, and also they know that within these institutions, they will find partners and friends in these countries, because they are the ones who are helping them the most. The V4 countries have almost regular meetings with West Balkans and Eastern Partnership countries, with the clear objective of helping them and their negotiators reach the path of EU accession. They are essentially sharing their experiences and their methods from the 90s and early 2000s to help them reach that goal. Also, just as you said, Poland has a very clear security interest in all of this, And Hungary has a interest tied to national politics, because as we've clearly seen, the way the relationship between Hungary and Serbia developed in the last couple of years, or in the last decade, because of the fact Hungary is helping Serbia to come closer to EU, the state of the Hungarian minority in Serbia has greatly developed, and that is a very crucial factor for Hungarian diplomacy.
Peter, what do you think?
A neighborhood is, if you just look at the map, it's obvious why it's an important question. Also, the former mentioned strategic reasons are important. As such, the Czech Republic is always the least active supporter of these initiatives, because if you look at the map, it doesn't share a direct border with either an Eastern Partnership or a Western Balkan state. We here in Hungary always tend to say that the Western Balkans are 50 kilometers away from us, so to speak. And well, it's not as easy as such, but the fact that the 99 NATO bombing of Serbia or the small Yugoslavia was going over our heads. So we know that if there is some regional instability in the Western Balkans, it will have its effect on Hungary. Again, with the migration crisis, we saw that if there is some minor change in the region, the dynamics of the region, we will feel its effects, either in a positive or negative way, but Hungary will be affected. Poland, again, as it was mentioned, if you look at the Polish strategic papers, the question of Ukraine and Belarus as less Russian influence, more European presence is the major point in all of these papers. It's not surprising as such that Poland supported together with Sweden the Eastern Partnership initiative. They founded it, and they want to maintain a strong dialogue between the Eastern Partnership states and the European Union. Let's not forget the fact that, for example, France is quite clearly against this cooperation format, as it wants to focus the EU's efforts on the Mediterranean. So again, we see this struggle within the European Union, where to put the focus, why should Western European EU member states support the Eastern Partnership? As it was just said a couple of sentences before, they know exactly that these countries will be grateful to Central European states should they join the EU. That would weaken their position, and as such, for them, it's a big dilemma what to do with this partnership format. The question of Croatia, I think, is a good example. Croatia joined the European Union and is a valuable member of the group. It's the Croatian presidency was just a while back, and they really try their best to come up with important questions and important solutions. Okay, the ongoing coronavirus crisis, pandemic, had
hit
its
them
way.
Hard. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, it was. It couldn't be not addressed, but the fact that the Croatian membership is a success story shows that these countries have their place in Europe, in the European Union, of course, should they wish to join, because we know that Serbia, for example, is against NATO membership, while if you look at NATO, Albania and Montenegro's membership, small countries, the critics always said that what can these countries contribute to a big military security alliance? We see now that they can contribute on their level and on their smaller numbers, but still they do contribute and they try their best. And I think it's important to divide questions of integration from the question that what can be directly gained from small member states, and look on the little bit long run and see that a more united Europe or a closely cooperating Europe is good for all the countries, not just the region, but on the continent.
So to conclude the question of the topic of the foreign policy of the V4 countries, and maybe a bit oversimplify the issues, but correct me if I'm wrong. The main idea of the foreign policy of the V4 to find friends and partners in the close neighborhood in order to increase their importance within the European Union and to secure their borders, their geopolitical position, basically.
Yes, I can agree with that, while also addressing, I think, bigger partners where and if possible as a group.
Well, let's finish this podcast with the last question, the future of the V4. What awaits the group? What are the main challenges for the group in the next decades? There was a meeting in February this year when the leaders of the V4 countries discussed actually the goals for the next years to come on the occasion of the 30th anniversary. So there is a thinking within the group about their future. How should it transform in the future, if it should, and what are the main challenges awaiting the V4 group? How do you see it?
Well, I think we addressed these issues in the past minutes, past like last half an hour, but yes, challenges will come. I would be happy if I could predict all of them, because then probably my field of work would be easier. But the foreign political goals, and then which one to choose to support mutually and which one to support on an individual basis, I think will be a challenge for the group, because our politicians should be aware of the fact that not all issues will be supported by all member states. And if we continue to push these questions together, then sooner or later one or two member states might say that we won't sign this paper, and this would weaken the V4 cooperation the most, if there would be a visible crack on a certain issue within the group, because I think the critics not people who are against the group, but people who wouldn't like to see a stronger Central European cooperation would jump on this issue and try to enlarge it as much as possible. So I would caution against the widening of the cooperation where it's not needed.
Just to flavor a bit the question, do you see any security risks and issues for the group in its close neighborhood? There were talks about military cooperation, joint military cooperation between the V4 countries. Is it something which may come in the next years for, not the risks, but the military cooperation? How do you see it? And of course, you can talk about the challenges as you see it.
The military cooperation is, I think, we're still too early to discuss that. We're nearly not close to this kind of cooperation in Central Europe. To do something institutionalized, you know, in that case. But as far as the challenges, I think what you already said, to highlight one, I think it's gonna be the strategic division on China and China's influence in Central Europe. That could become a point that will make that crack you've talked about very visible in a couple of years, because I think that this growing influence of Beijing through the Belt and Road Initiative will not go away in the next couple of years. It's gonna become only stronger.
Well, I know that I promised the last question, but let me ask one more connected to the future of the V4. How do you see it? Can the V4 group maybe evolve into something bigger? You already mentioned the V4 plus cooperations, and there were talks about including on some level Austria, Romania, Slovenia, Croatia, some Western Balkan countries. is it something which can transform the group in the future, broadening the cooperation on a more institutionalized level between the members?
I remember back in the day, this was the hot topic of Romania and Austria joining the V4. Then Slovenia and the issue of Slovenia and Croatia came up 5, 6, 7 years ago. I don't think that it's a viable solution. What we mentioned in the past 1 hour, I don't know, 45 minutes, the historical cultural roots and shared background of these countries is so specific that while Romania, for example, or Croatia or Austria share some of these roots, they don't share all of them, and as such, they don't share the road. This road was undertaken in the early 90s. It had its bumps, and the fact that we are bandwagoning in the same wagon for 3 decades now makes this group special, and adding a new member state on this level would I think hurt the cooperation. Of course, maintaining the V4 plus cooperation format, or maintaining a close cooperation on a given question, border control, security, innovation, there are many areas to cover, would benefit the group, and I would strongly support that idea, but I wouldn't enlarge the cooperation on the highest level.
Well, I absolutely agree, but in the same time, I think the 3Cs initiative is something that is almost designed to replace the need to get more countries involved in the V4. So V4 stands in the center of the 3Cs and have all the countries that you mentioned: Austria, Romania, Croatia, Slovenia, and it could be a forum of cooperation for a sort of like a broader V4, but only on the topics that this kind of cooperation could be really effective on.
Okay, thank you very much. On this note, let's finish this podcast. We were talking about the V4 group, as it is the 30th anniversary of the group this year. And our guests were Peter Dobrowiecki, and the research leader at Antal Jozef Nulis Center, and Tomasz Orban, the research fellow at Danube Institute, and myself, I'm Anton Menarzewski, the geopolitical group leader at Danube Institute. Thank you very much for listening to us. Please follow us on Facebook and check our newest analysis and materials at danubeinstitute.hu. Thank you very much.